You know, when you think about the Book of the Covenant, those laws in Exodus, chapters 20 through 23, it's kind of amazing to think of the impact they've had, but did they just appear out of nowhere?
Right.
We've got this lecture transcript from Robert Van Noy, and he's really diving into how those laws might connect to even older law codes from places like Mesopotamia.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
To understand the Book of the Covenant, we really need to look at the world that it came from.
Right.
And the thing is, long before Moses, there were already these well-established legal codes in the ancient Near East.
So we're talking about like law codes that were ancient history, even to the Israelites.
Exactly. Like, think about the Code of Yernamu that goes back to around 2100 to 2050 BC.
Wow.
Then you've got the Laws of Eshnunna from around 1930 BC, the Code of Lippit-Ishtar around 1870 BC, and of course the famous Code of Hammurabi from around 1750 BC.
Okay, slow down.
I know, right?
That's a lot of dates.
It is.
It's mind-boggling to think about how long these codes had already been around.
Oh yeah, and we can't forget about the Hittite laws.
Right.
Those are estimated to be from 1650 to 1500 BC.
So by the time we get to the Israelites at Mount Sinai, legal traditions were very much already
Oh,
established.
absolutely.
This makes me wonder how much did those older codes actually influence the Book of the Covenant?
Right.
Like, did the writers just borrow ideas?
Well, Vanoy uses this fascinating example to illustrate this point.
Right.
Laws regarding ox goring, both Exodus 21.35 and the laws of Eshnunna number 53, address this very specific situation. And the legal outcomes are remarkably similar.
Okay, that is interesting.
Yeah.
But, some people might hear that and think, wait a minute, is this saying that the Bible is copied from other cultures?
Yeah, that's where Vanoy makes a really important distinction.
Right.
So while there are similarities, he argues that the Book of the Covenant has this unique character that sets it apart.
Okay.
He points to Exodus 21.1, where it says, "These are the laws you were to set before them."
Right.
This emphasizes that God is directly instructing Moses.
So it's more than just like borrowing legal concepts. There's
Yeah.
this divine element to these laws.
Right.
But if that's the case, what makes the Book of the Covenant stand out?
Well,
Vinoy mentioned seven key differences, right?
yes, he did.
Okay.
And they're crucial for understanding what sets these laws apart.
Okay.
So first, consider the emphasis on one God.
Okay.
The Book of the Covenant insists on the worship of Yahweh alone, unlike other codes that were fine with a whole pantheon of deities.
Right, that's a huge difference.
It is.
And it reminds me of, that fundamental commandment, you shall have no other gods before me.
Right.
That sets the stage for everything that follows.
Absolutely. And that focus on one God has this ripple effect across the entire legal system.
I see.
So, for example, the second key difference is the emphasis on the sanctity of human life,
Okay.
which wasn't always a top priority in these other ancient codes. Do you have an example that really highlights that difference? A powerful one is in Exodus 21.28, even an ox that kills a person cannot be eaten. Right.
It seems like a small detail, but it shows this reverence for life
Okay.
that you just didn't see in some other codes.
Right. It makes you think about the values behind those laws.
Exactly.
So what's the next difference, Vanoy points out?
The third difference is the restraint in punishment.
Okay.
So unlike the Code of Hammurabi, which is famous for its, eye for an eye brutality, the Book of the Covenant avoids those really gruesome punishments.
Yeah, you don't see those, extreme punishments like cutting off hands or plucking out eyes in the Bible.
Exactly.
Right.
And this difference speaks volumes about the ethical framework behind the laws.
Yeah.
The Book of the Covenant aims for justice,
Right.
but it doesn't resort to the excessive brutality that you
Yeah.
see in other codes.
It sounds like a more humane approach,
It does.
even within, the context of ancient law.
Yeah.
What's the fourth difference?
It's the emphasis on equity.
Okay.
This idea that all individuals are equal before God, regardless of their social status.
This contrasts sharply with other ancient systems where your punishment could vary wildly depending on whether you were a slave commoner or an aristocrat.
That's pretty radical for that time period.
It is.
Does Vanoy give an example of how that played out in the laws?
He does Exodus 21.7:11, which deals with the treatment of slaves.
Okay.
It mandates fair treatment and lays out conditions for slaves to gain their freedom. Compare that to Hammurabi's code, where the punishment for a crime depended entirely on the social class of the victim.
Wow.
Yeah.
So even though slavery still existed, the Book of the Covenant seems to be pushing toward a more just and equitable system.
It does.
Okay, what about the fifth difference?
It has to do with the protection of marriage. The Book of the Covenant emphasizes the sanctity of marriage and sets out these really strict punishments for adultery and fornication.
That makes sense, given how central marriage and family are in the Old Testament.
It does.
How does that differ from other ancient laws, though?
Well, while other codes address sexual offenses, they often had exceptions or loopholes.
Hmm.
The Book of the Covenant is more unwavering in its defense of marriage.
Oh.
For example, Exodus 22.16 states that if a man seduces a virgin, he is obligated to marry her.
Wow.
It shows this commitment to responsibility.
Right.
And protection that's absent in other codes.
That's a pretty stark contrast.
It is.
It suggests that the Book of the Covenant is trying to establish a different kind of societal standard when it comes to relationships and families.
Yeah.
So that concern for societal well-being.
Right.
Extends to the most vulnerable members of society.
That's right.
That's the sixth key difference Vanoy highlights.
Exactly.
You're talking about the protection of widows, orphans, and foreigners, right?
Exactly. Yeah. The Book of the Covenant lays out harsh consequences for anyone who mistreats these vulnerable groups.
I remember that verse from Exodus 22.21:22. Do not mistreat or oppress a foreigner, for you are foreigners in Egypt. Do not take advantage of the widow or the fatherless. If you do, and they cry out to me, I will certainly hear their cry. It really emphasizes that ethical imperative to protect those who are powerless.
That's a perfect example.
Yeah.
It speaks to this deeper compassion
right.
that runs through these laws.
Okay.
And this leads to Vanoy's seventh point.
Okay.
The Book of the Covenant isn't just this cold list of rules and punishments.
Okay.
It has this real humanitarian concern woven throughout.
So it's about more than just following the letter of the law. It's about cultivating a just and compassionate society.
Precisely. The Book of the Covenant sets this higher ethical standard than just a transactional view of law.
Okay.
It's about living in a way that reflects God's character, a character defined by justice, mercy, and care for the vulnerable.
That's a pretty significant takeaway.
It is.
It seems like these seven differences point to something bigger. You know, something that sets the Book of the Covenant apart from these other ancient codes.
You're right. And that's just the beginning. Now we need to look at how these laws were put into practice. That traumatic moment when the covenant was officially ratified.
Okay, I'm ready. Let's dive into that scene and uncover what makes it so powerful.
Okay. Yeah, that moment of ratification described in Exodus 24.
Okay.
It's really key to understanding this whole idea of a covenant.
Okay.
You know, it's not just like a set of laws.
Right.
It's this binding agreement.
Right.
With real weight to it.
I'm picturing that scene at the foot of Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
You know what makes the ceremony so significant?
Well, there are three main elements that really stand out.
Okay.
First, you've got the covenant document itself.
Right.
You know, they call the Book of the Covenant in verse 7.
Right.
And this written document lays out the laws that we've been discussing.
So it's like putting it all in writing.
Exactly, making it official.
Okay.
Then you've got the covenant stipulations.
Okay.
These are the spoken words where Moses is explaining the people's responsibilities.
It's interesting that there are both written and spoken components.
Yeah.
Is that common in ancient agreements?
It added another layer of solemnity
right.
to the agreement.
Oh.
And then finally, you've got that covenant oath.
Okay.
In verses 3 and 7.
Uh-huh.
The people declare, everything the Lord has said, we will do.
Powerful stuff.
It is.
It signifies their commitment to actually upholding the covenant.
Right.
And then, of course, there's that image of the blood sprinkling, which is pretty intense.
Yeah.
What's the significance of that?
Well, the blood symbolizes two things. Atonement for past wrongs,
mm-hmm.
and then also a commitment to the covenant going forward.
So it's not just a one-time ritual.
Well,
it represents an ongoing relationship.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The blood is this powerful visual reminder of that bond between God and the Israelites.
Okay, but what's even more fascinating to me is this whole connection between the structure of this covenant and these ancient Hittite treaties.
Right.
Oh, right. You mentioned those earlier.
Exactly.
I did. I'm curious to hear more about how they connect.
So imagine a powerful king called a suzerain making a treaty with a weaker king called a vassal.
Okay.
The suzerain offers protection.
Right.
In exchange for loyalty and specific obligations.
Okay, so these Hittite treaties followed a very specific structure.
Yes, they did.
And it's remarkably similar to the covenant at Sinai.
It is.
So wait, are you saying that the biblical covenant borrows from the structure of these political treaties?
In a way, yes. It's as if God is using a framework that would have been very familiar to the Israelites.
Right.
To establish this unique relationship with them.
So let's break it down.
Yeah.
What are those six elements?
Okay, so the first is the preamble, which identifies the author of the treaty.
Okay.
In this case, that's God himself.
Makes sense. He's the one initiating this whole agreement.
Right. The second element is the historical prologue. And this is where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
In Hittite treaties, this section would remind the vassal of all the good things that the suzerain had done for them.
Uh-huh.
You know, laying the groundwork for obligation.
It's like saying, remember all I've done for you.
Exactly.
Now it's your turn to hold up your end of the bargain.
Exactly. And in the biblical context, think about the Exodus story. God's deliverance of the Israelites from slavery in Egypt.
It becomes the foundation for their relationship with him.
Exactly.
That's a brilliant connection.
It is.
So God's act of liberation sets the stage for this whole covenant.
Exactly. What's the third element?
Yeah, what is it?
The basic stipulation, a general statement of loyalty from the vassal to the suzerain.
Okay.
For the Israelites, this is their commitment to obey God's commands.
Like saying, we're with you, God.
Exactly. What's next?
Okay, what's next?
Next comes the detailed stipulations, the specific laws and commands.
Okay.
So in the Book of the Covenant, this would be all those detailed laws we discussed earlier about property, personal injury, and social responsibility.
Okay, so it's like moving from the big picture to the practical, everyday implications of that loyalty.
Exactly. The fifth element is witnesses.
Okay.
Hittite treaties would call upon the gods as witnesses.
Right.
To make the treaty binding.
To make it all official.
Right. The biblical covenant, we see things like the stone pillars representing the tribes, or even heaven and earth being called as witnesses.
It's like saying, this is serious.
It is.
This is made before all of creation.
Right.
It's amazing imagery.
What's the last element?
All right. What is it?
The final element is the blessings and curses.
Right.
Outlining the consequences of obedience and disobedience.
So it's that built-in system of rewards and punishments?
Yes. And this is woven throughout the Old Testament.
Okay.
Blessings for following the covenant.
Right.
Curses for breaking it.
It highlights how seriously they took this agreement.
Absolutely.
This whole connection to Hittite treaties is fascinating.
It is.
It seems like God used a structure that they understood to communicate something much deeper.
He did. And here's something else to consider.
Okay.
The classic Hittite treaty form actually emphasizes the suzerain's generosity.
Oh, okay.
And includes blessings.
Yeah.
This contrasts with later treaty forms that were much harsher.
So the biblical covenant aligns with a form that emphasizes a more mutual relationship.
Yes.
Not just like raw power and domination.
Yeah. And this has implications for how we understand certain biblical texts, like the book of Deuteronomy.
Deuteronomy? How does that fit in?
Well, Deuteronomy is essentially a renewal of the covenant.
Okay.
And it follows that same classic Hittite treaty structure.
So are you suggesting that this supports an earlier dating for Deuteronomy, closer to the time of Moses?
Yeah.
When those treaty forms were common?
That's a point of scholarly debate, of course.
Right.
But the use of that specific treaty form does lend credence to a more traditional dating.
Wow. We've gone from ancient law codes to the Book of the Covenant to Hittite treaties, and now even the dating of biblical texts.
I know, it's amazing.
It's incredible how it all connects.
It is amazing, isn't it? These seemingly separate pieces of history all come together to paint this fascinating picture of how God interacted with his people.
Right.
But there's still more to explore. Next, we'll delve into the implications of this treaty structure for how the covenant was transmitted and preserved across generations.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. We've explored those intriguing connections between the Book of the Covenant and these other ancient law codes.
Right.
And we've even uncovered how it echoes the structure of those Hittite treaties.
Yeah, it's remarkable how these pieces of history all fit together.
Right.
But the big question is, what does all this mean for our understanding of the Book of the Covenant?
Right, like what's the purpose?
Yeah.
What's the lasting significance?
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm grappling with. You know, we've established that these laws weren't just borrowed from other cultures. What? They have this divine element. Right. They reflect God's character.
Right.
But what does that actually mean, like both for the Israelites back then and for us today?
Well, if we look closely at the content of these laws, we see this blueprint for a just and compassionate society.
Okay.
It's not just about punishment. It's about building a community where people care for each other.
Right.
Deal fairly.
Yeah.
And value human life.
So it's more than just like avoiding getting in trouble.
Exactly.
It's about living in a way that actually reflects God's values.
Exactly. And it's all framed within this covenant relationship.
Right.
These aren't just random rules.
Right.
They're expressions of this very unique bond between God and his people.
That makes sense. The Israelites are choosing to live by these laws out of love and loyalty to God,
right.
not just fear of punishment.
Exactly.
But how does this ancient law code apply to us today? You know, our world is so different.
Right. That's the question, isn't it? And it's one that's been debated for centuries.
Yeah.
While we may not be bound by the letter of every single law,
mm-hmm.
the principles behind them are timeless.
So we're not required to offer animal sacrifices or stone someone for working on the Sabbath. But those core values of justice, compassion, and ethical conduct still matter.
Absolutely. The Book of the Covenant gives us this framework for understanding what it means to live in right relationship with God and with each other.
Mm.
It challenges us to look at our own lives and our own society
mm-hmm.
and ask if we're living up to those same principles.
That's a powerful challenge. It's easy to get caught up in the specifics, you know, the rules and regulations.
Right, right.
But it's those underlying principles that have the power to change hearts.
Yes.
And transform communities.
You've hit the nail on the head. The Book of the Covenant invites us to move beyond a legalistic mindset and embrace a way of life characterized by justice, mercy, and faithfulness.
Yeah.
It's about reflecting God's character in all we do.
This has been an incredible journey. We've explored ancient law codes, uncovered the uniqueness of the Book of the Covenant, and even delved into Hittite treaties who knew it would all be so interconnected.
I know, it's amazing, right?
It makes you realize how God works through history using all these different elements to reveal his truth.
He does. And as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with something to ponder. Knowing all this, how does it change your understanding of how God communicates with humanity? What does it tell you about the timeless nature of his truth and how he uses what's familiar to reveal something entirely new?
That's a great question to reflect on. It reminds me that God meets us where we are, you know, speaking to us in ways we can understand the specifics might change. But those core principles of justice, mercy, and love, those remain constant. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep seeking, keep exploring, and keep asking those big questions.